Chapter 17, My First Powwow. When I first started running, I was almost completely ignorant about Indian country. But we have 11 reservations in Minnesota, and I knew enough to know that tribes in our state and all around the country face enormous problems. These problems can seem so big and so numerous that people in a position to do something about them often give up. Not Paul Wellstone. Paul had been the last Minnesota senator to serve on the Indian Affairs Committee. In that tradition, I wanted our tribes to be well represented in the Senate. 2 days after I announced my candidacy, I visited the Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior Chippewa, or Ojibwe, in northeastern Minnesota. Karen Diver, Fond du Lac's no-nonsense but affable chairwoman, was puzzled that I'd come up to meet them so early in the campaign, instead of waiting to check that box in the last couple weeks before the election, as almost every candidate does. I said I wanted to learn about Indians. Karen began by talking about sovereignty. The Constitution recognizes Indian tribes as sovereign nations. Now, you'll be shocked to hear this, but there's no way to sugarcoat it. Historically, the United States has not always respected tribal sovereignty. Karen told me about a recent study on sovereignty by Harvard's Kennedy School of Government, which concluded that tribes who govern themselves do better than those dictated to by the federal government. I found the study online and called Karen a few days later to discuss it. She was surprised I'd actually gone home and read it. So one of the first things I learned about Indians is that they don't expect much from politicians. During the campaign, I visited most of our reservations and attended roundtables with Native leaders. But it wasn't until August of 2008 that I was invited to a powwow by the Red Lake Band of Chippewa. The Red Lake Reservation is a good 250 miles north of the Twin Cities and is the poorest 1,200 square miles in our state, with tremendously high rates of unemployment. Its population of around 5,100 has seen more than its share of tragedy. In 2005, a 15-year-old boy shot and killed his grandfather and his grandfather's girlfriend, then went to his old school and killed seven others before committing suicide. But a powwow is a happy occasion, a celebration of cultural heritage. Excited, I sat down with Peggy Flanagan, a half-Ojibwe 20-something Minneapolis school board member who was advising me on Indian issues and who is now a Minnesota state legislator. Peggy had about a half an hour to prepare me for my first powwow. Okay, don't call them costumes. They're wearing regalia. I wasn't planning on calling them anything, I said, but okay, regalia. And don't dance, Peggy told me definitively. Don't dance. Don't dance. Why shouldn't I dance? Governor Pawlenty danced a couple years ago, and they haven't stopped making fun of him, she said with a half grin. Okay, don't dance. Don't dance. Now, Indians volunteer for military service at a higher rate than any other group in the country. I didn't know that, I said. And they respect their warriors, so the drums will start, and then the warriors will lead in their traditional regalia. Regalia, I got it, I nodded. But they'll also be wearing their veterans' caps and carrying flags. Right, sure. And after the veterans, the others will come out in their regalia, and everyone dances around the circle to the drums, and they'll dance a number of dances. And should I dance? Peggy knew me well enough to ignore this. Now, after the dances, the drums will stop, and everyone will go to sit in the bleachers, and Chairman Jourdain will introduce you. Okay. So what do you plan to say? She asked. I realized that I hadn't given that a lot of thought, but tried out some of what I had learned. Well, I guess I'd say to them that because of the cultural trauma that your people have gone through, you've experienced a lot of pathologies like chemical dependency and domestic violence. Yeah, they've heard that, Peggy said matter-of-factly. They're going to expect you to be funny. Well, that took me a little by surprise. Peggy wasn't with the campaign full-time, but she'd been involved enough to know our key strategic objective. We're trying to get away from the funny, I reminded her. Peggy nodded. I know, but they're going to expect you to be funny. And after you speak, there'll be more dancing. Don't dance. Peggy couldn't come on the 6-hour drive to Red Lake the next day, and While I felt I had internalized her instructions, I was frankly pretty nervous about my remarks. I had never spoken to a large Indian audience before, and I wanted to let them know that I'd given some serious thought to their issues. But I trusted Peggy. On the drive up, I told Chris that I decided I'd just have to read the crowd and go with my gut. Chris and I arrived at Red Lake just in time and drove right to the powwow grounds. The arena was a set of concentric circles. In the middle was a circular gazebo, and around it a wide dirt circle for dancing. All around the outside of the dance circle were drums, which provided the rhythm for the dancing. The drummers would sing traditional Ojibwe songs as well. The outside circle was comprised of bleachers, where a good crowd of spectators had gathered for the festivities. The drums started, and just as Peggy said, the veterans led in their regalia and caps from the Gulf Wars, from Vietnam and Korea. There was even one member of the Greatest Generation wearing his World War II cap. They were followed by others in their regalia, men, women, and children, dancing around the outdoor arena. I stood on the outside of the dancing circle, enjoying myself, at least until a middle-aged man danced up to me and said, "Why don't you come in and dance?" He danced in place, motioning with his arm that I should come in and join everyone. I said uncomfortably, I will respect you more if you dance, he said with great seriousness. Okay, maybe later, I said with great lameness. One nod and he moved on. I thought as I backed away from the circle. Maybe I should have had Peggy come with me. Or maybe I should at least have asked her what I should say if someone asked me to dance. After about 30 or 40 minutes of drumming and dancing, the sun had set, the MC announced the speaking portion of the powwow, and the dancers took their seats in the bleachers with the others. Buck Jourdain, the long-standing chairman of Red Lake, took a hand mic out to the arena under the lights. It was turning dark, and the heat of the afternoon had dissipated. The stars were out, the air was soft, it was an exquisitely beautiful northern Minnesota night. And I was very nervous. Buck started his introduction. We had met a few times before, and in the intro, he called me a friend. That meant a lot to me, because I had been really impressed with Buck. He was in his 40s, tall and handsome, with a beautiful braided ponytail, and he carried himself with strength and dignity. My friends with ponytails are mostly people in show business, aging, paunchy, bespectacled Jews, whose ponytails always seem like a desperate affectation signaling unsuccessfully that the wearer is still young and cool, despite their recent hip replacement. But on Buck, the ponytail looked good. Buck gave me a small man hug and passed me the mic to polite applause. I took in the crowd for a moment, trying to get a read from the faces. Not much of anything. I thanked Buck and told the crowd they had a great chairman. I started in on how the federal government was failing to meet its treaty obligations in terms of fully funding Indian education and health care, and how if I won, I'd hope to be on the Indian Affairs Committee and fight to change that. No reaction. Peggy was right. They'd heard this before. They're gonna expect you to be funny. I decided to call an audible. So I guess if we don't fulfill our treaty obligations, we should just give you all your land back and call it even. That got something of a laugh and a few nods. And as far as education, I guess other Americans need to know that Indians are a contemporary people who like to celebrate their culture just like every other group. For example, I'm Jewish. This got exactly the reaction I was hoping for. Nothing. Let me try that again, I said, feigning offense. I'm Jewish. Laughter, applause, and cheering. My God, I thought, Peggy's a genius. And Jews like to celebrate our own heritage, just like you're doing today. The crowd was nodding and smiling, and in that very instant, I figured out the whole dancing thing. Now, earlier, a gentleman asked me to dance. Well, I'll make a deal with you. I will dance, but only if you all agree not to make fun of me after I leave. More laughter. So, I need a show of hands. How many agree not to make fun of me after I leave if I dance? Everyone looked around at each other, and about two-thirds of the crowd raised their hands. That's not enough, I said. I need everyone to raise their hands. More laughs, and sure enough, every single person there raised a hand. All right, I grinned, thinking how silly it was that I'd been so nervous. Why, I've got them in the palm of my hand. I will dance. That's when one of the drummers hit his drum. Joined on the second beat by another, then another, until all the drummers were drumming. Often what makes a really good joke a really good joke is that a number of ideas come together simultaneously. The moment that that first drummer hit his drum, he brought together several amusing notions. First, that for whatever reason, I clearly had serious qualms about dancing. Second, that those qualms had something to do with my fear of being made fun of. Third, that I thought those fears would magically disappear if everyone agreed not to make fun of me after I left. And finally, that number three was based on my mistaken assumption that I would be dancing along with everyone else and not by myself in front of the entire crowd, plus cell phone cameras. So it was a really good joke, and it was on me. Everyone in the bleachers was laughing at the drummer's very clever joke and staring at me, waiting for me to start dancing. How did I get myself into this? I thought. The drummers kept up the beat, the crowd grinning expectantly. Fortunately, I had paid attention after I told the gentleman that I might dance. And so I began, two shuffles from my left foot, two shuffles from my right foot, trying to stay in rhythm. As I started around the circle, I kept my head down, trying unsuccessfully to block out the crowd's reaction, which I would describe as delighted amusement. I looked up to the bleachers and gave a smile as if to share in the merriment and show that I was a good sport, but I'm afraid I wasn't hiding my embarrassment and, as I recall, self-loathing. My own cultural heritage was on display as well. About a quarter away around the circle, a little girl, I'd say 4 or 5 years old, jumped up and bailed me out. She grabbed my hand, and the two of us danced a little further until another child came in and took my other hand. And then another and another and another. The night was beautiful again. The adults came in, and we all danced under the moon and stars. And I became kind of a dancing fool. 4 or 5 dances later, a woman sidled up to me and said, "You dance like a white guy." "What about the deal?" I asked. "The deal was after you leave," she smiled. At the end of the powwow, Buck approached me. I talked with the rest of the tribal council, and they all agreed that we've never had a politician here who knows how to read a crowd as well as you. I was flattered. Of course, it was a good bet that I was the only politician to visit Red Lake who had spent 35 years in show business, but also I had to laugh because the whole thing had lurched so badly out of control before landing on its feet. Buck took me by the arm and said, "I'd like to introduce you to my son and his friend who's in the army." We walked out to the parking lot where we found the two young men leaning up against an old beat-up car. We all shook hands, and I asked a friend, "How long have you been in the army?" "Oh, I was only there about a month," he shrugged. "I got kicked out because I can't see very well." I was puzzled. You're not wearing glasses." He just shrugged. The army was going to make me glasses, but they didn't. I was confused. What's wrong with your eyesight?" "I don't know," he said. All of this was well outside my life experience. I asked an obvious question. Have you gone to the eye doctor?" "Oh, we don't have an eye doctor," he said. One of the best things about running for office is that if you do it right, you learn a lot about stuff you very likely would never have discovered otherwise. One of the worst things about running for office is that if you do it right, you're constantly switching gears. As soon as you're done with one thing, you're off to another, which leaves you almost no time to process the stuff you just learned about. Leaving the powwow, I was overwhelmed, both with gratitude at how welcoming and generous Buck and the Red Lake community had been, and with shame at the conditions in which so many first Americans were living. But as Chris was in charge of reminding me, even in the car, there was more work to do, more phone calls to make, more notes to write, more events to prepare for. A candidate who's sitting around thinking is a candidate who's losing. In fact, the day after the powwow, I had to fly right off to New York for a couple of fundraisers in the richest place in America, the Hamptons. The Hamptons are the summer home of the top one-tenth of the top 1%. The ones with the waterfront estates are the members of the top one-tenth of the top one-tenth of the top 1%. The ones with the nicest, biggest waterfront estates and the richest Hampton of them all, Rich Hampton, are members of the top one-tenth of the top one-tenth of the top one-tenth of the top 1%, the top 1,000th percent. Every one of these people can go to an eye doctor pretty much any time they want, or more likely, have an eye doctor brought to them for a full examination. There at this lovely home in Richhampton, with delicious food and wine and surrounded by people with flawlessly corrected vision wearing the latest designer regalia, I felt that my donors needed to hear about Red Lake. So I told them the story I've just told you. I didn't tell them the end of the story, though, because the ending hadn't happened yet. When I got to the Senate, I got that seat on the Indian Affairs Committee because, in the Senate, anyone who wants to be on Indian Affairs gets on Indian Affairs. One of the things I fought hard for was allowing Indian tribal courts to prosecute non-Indians who commit acts of domestic violence. I was also able to get funding to replace a dilapidated, structurally unsafe high school on the Leech Lake Reservation in Minnesota. We passed a new Indian Health Care Improvement Act, and Red Lake now has an eye doctor. But the conditions in Indian country in terms of education, infrastructure, housing, and health care are still by and large disgraceful. The good news is that folks in Richhampton are doing better than ever.